everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Bitcoin Banter. I've got Rick and Tony. Gentlemen, let's jump right into the news today. So we've got, first of all, a tweet that we shared, a video. Let's just take a, I think it's like 50 seconds or something. Let's watch this.
This one time, Bitcoin went from 6 cents all the way to 36 cents, and then it crashed down to 21 cents. And then another time, Bitcoin went from 85 cents all the way to $29, and then it crashed to $3. And then another time, Bitcoin went all the way to $213, and then it crashed all the way to $70. And then another time, Bitcoin went all the way to $1,100, and then it crashed all the way to $239. So the moral of the story is don't buy Bitcoin because you know it's going to crash again.
Alrighty, so reactions. Bitcoin goes up and then it crashes and then it goes up and then it crashes. It happens. Rick, why don't you start with your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I mean, look, the reason I shared this video on Twitter is it's one of my favorite videos. This one's really quite old, this video. You can probably tell from the prices that the guy's talking about, right? Like $200 and all this sort of thing. So that's like an OG video that everybody loves. Like, and what I love about it is he's obviously having a laugh and a joke, but he's actually making quite an important point. Because if you're paying attention, the joke is that, okay, it keeps crashing, but it keeps getting higher and higher and higher over time. So yeah, look, the reason we're putting those kind of videos out is just to remind people, like, yes, you know, the price is down a bit over the last month or two or whatever, but like, don't lose your head, right? You know, Bitcoin is well known for crashing, but you know, this is an emergent technology that's 15 years old. The vast majority, probably 99% of the population, still don't understand it. Even some of the people buying it don't really know what they're buying and what it means and what it's for. So, you know, the volatility is to be expected. The people who do well in Bitcoin are the ones who spend the time learning what it is, understanding what they're holding, and then having a long-term time horizon. Like, if it's not even just Bitcoin, right? This is general life advice now. Like, if you go into anything thinking I'm going to be rich next week, I got news for you, pal. You're dreaming, right? So stop looking for this lottery ticket and just understand that Bitcoin's money is superior money. It's great to save in it and you need a long-term time horizon and you'll be just fine. And it is going to crash again. So just get used to it.
Yeah. Take it from a guy who's been there for a long time. Tony, how about you?
Absolutely, man. The crashing is a feature. It's the nicest thing about Bitcoin, especially for those that understand it, is that it gives you an opportunity to scoop it up, right? The mere fact that it's crashing just confirms that most people don't understand it or are not even putting the time to understand it and just don't understand money in general because they're treating this as a speculative asset like some stock like Apple or Tesla or something ridiculous like this, rather than, you know, cluing in that this is the world's most valuable asset and that you want to hold as much of it as possible because at some point you won't be able to and it'll be worth way more than you can possibly imagine right now because we've never seen anything like it. You have nothing to compare it against. So, but you know, human nature is what it is. Everybody wants the easy payout, you know, the get rich quick scheme. And so they go in, you know, they leverage, you know, to no end, they get wrecked, the price crashes. But for those of us that do the work and understand, you know, that, you know, one man's loss is another one's gain, the more the merrier. Keep up these silly games. And at some point, hopefully, you learn your lesson and it won't cost you too much by then.
Yeah, Tony, I'd reiterate an important point that you make a lot is zoom out, quit fixating on the price because there's so much more to Bitcoin than the exchange rate between dollars. You know, we're trying to use this ever-changing measuring stick to evaluate what Bitcoin's value is. And at the end of the day, a Bitcoin is a Bitcoin and there's only 21 million of them.
Absolutely.
So, next piece of news. This is a fun one. So, Iraqi banks used U.S. created system to funnel funds to Iran. And this is Pierre Richard sharing it. And he observed that Senator Elizabeth Warren, who is the ultimate hater of Bitcoin and the concept of decentralized money, is always the one badgering, you know, it's criminal use case and this and that. And it turns out you can use dollars and other fiat currencies for criminal purposes. Tony, why don't you take this one?
Yeah, this is a very interesting one. It's one that, you know, casts the right spotlight on the right people to expose the hypocrisy and, you know, to prove right what so many people have been saying for a very long time, that the number one tool for terrorism and money laundering is the U.S. dollar. And but all of these narratives, all of these stories have obviously been masked, hidden in the past, because, you know, it exposes who the real thieves and who the real criminals are. And so when people like Elizabeth Warren comes out and, you know, starts marketing Bitcoin as tools for the underground, tools for the bad guys, money launderers and terrorism, you know, whereas her own product is the one that's clearly provingly being shown used over and over again historically in the worst possible crimes worldwide, you know. Well, now you can't hide that anymore, you know, because Bitcoin is an open, transparent ledger. You can visibly see that none of what she's saying is true. But whereas you just have to go back in time, you know, not that far back either, to see that previous wars and crimes, especially like this article, you know, specifically mentions the Iraq funding of Iran. What was the number one currency being used for this? It was the U.S. dollar. So, you know, hypocrites, you know, being exposed. There's no mum's the word. Of course, they don't want to talk about it, because what are they going to say? But again, every lie has an expiry date, and we're starting to see this more and more.
Yeah, it's almost like they forgot that crime existed before 2009 when the Bitcoin network was launched. It's wild. Like, you know, I guess there just wasn't any crime before Bitcoin. It's the root cause of all of our problems today. Rick?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's the same old story, isn't it? I mean, first of all, you know, Elizabeth Warren, I mean, she's an absolutely ridiculous woman. I mean, I appreciate that I'm sitting here in the UK commenting again on sort of US politics. And please understand that the politicians over here are even more insane, potentially, right, than in the US. But I mean, she spent almost like 10 years now bashing Bitcoin. And the nonsense that comes out of this woman's mouth is just beyond belief. And like Tony says, what a hypocrite, right? You know, if she can find any tiny shred of information that suggests a criminal has ever used Bitcoin, then she'll use it to spout off and you know, cry wolf and all this sort of stuff. But, you know, when traditional banks do it and governments do it and they're using the dollar, obviously, you know, no one says a word. And, you know, it's not like this is salacious news. Like this kind of news just doesn't even surprise me anymore. I mean, this has been going on forever. Back in 2012, I don't know if you guys remember, but HSBC, they got fined something like $1.9 billion because they'd helped the Mexican Sinaloa cartel and the Colombian Norte del Val cartels like launder like $890 million or something, right? Now, here's what's really interesting about that. So, you know, the traditional system is used for far more fraud, crime, money laundering, whatever you want to call it, than Bitcoin is, right? You know, and we've known that for a long time. And how many people from HSBC went to jail because they helped launder this drug money from the cartels? Exactly. Absolutely nobody goes to jail, right? And then, you know, let's think a bit more about this, right? So, you know, all this money that we're all sending to Ukraine, right? Like, I don't know how much the US has sent, that Britain's sending like another 3 billion or something, you know, next week, who knows? You know, I'm not trying to make a political point about the war here, but what I'm trying to say is like, how many people out there really believe that we have like proper accounting and receipts for what this money was spent on and whether it went into, you know, whose hands and what private companies got contracts to for weapons and all, you know, the idea that the US dollar is not the main source of like crime, corruption, money laundering, and all this by bad actors like Elizabeth Warren and all her mates is almost a comedy now when they talk about this sort of stuff. And look, the final point I want to make on this, I think it's worth mentioning on a Bitcoin podcast, is no one from HSBC went to jail. And at the current moment, the developers from Samurai, who made the service that let Bitcoiners, you know, anonymize their UTXOs and make their payments private, those guys never held anybody's funds in their software, right? And they never even knew the identities of the people using their software. And, you know, the amounts in terms of monetary value involved are tiny, and yet the Department of Justice in the US is now trying to throw those guys in jail for 25 years. Meanwhile, if you work at HSBC and you work with a drug cartel, nobody cares. So, you know, we have to exit their system quickly because, you know, they're really taking the mickey now, and they're not even really trying to hide it anymore, these guys.
Well, the thing is, Bitcoin...
And I'll add that this... Oh, yeah.
No, I'm just saying Bitcoin is a direct competition. They understand this now, that Bitcoin is going to destroy the dollar or categorically replace it eventually. This is why they hate it. This is why they're trying to, you know, cast a bad light onto it, hoping that the majority of the population will believe their lies, you know, because previously that's what happened. But unfortunately for them, the truth is growing bigger in numbers on a daily basis, and they don't like this. So this is what's happening, and this is where whenever you hear somebody's talking badly about Bitcoin, ask yourself why. What is that? What do they have to gain to diss something that is based on truth, fully transparent, fully auditable, you know, and like cannot possibly lie, right? Why are they doing it? Well, because it exposes the truth that who the real thieves, who the real criminals, who the real terrorists really are. And they don't want the world to know this. But unfortunately, that's becoming a fact every single day. Thankfully, hopefully, for the future of humanity.
Yeah. Now, in fairness, this isn't even an indictment of fiat currency, right? This is an indictment of humanity. Like, crime has existed for forever, and they're going to use whatever form of money is prevalent and saleable. And for a long, long time, it's been the US dollar. More recently, it's been Bitcoin and the dollar and every other fiat currency that exists on planet. And I'm sure it was all happening on a gold standard or a silver standard, right? I mean, people just they attribute to one thing what is perfectly attributable to another. And that is humanity is just a bunch of people making mistakes, trying to figure it out, and over time committing crime.
Hey there, just a really quick break from Bitcoin Banter, and we'll be right back. Wanted to remind you that we, the Bitcoin Way, are the leaders in achieving self-sovereignty, whether it's self-custodying your Bitcoin properly and securely, protecting your online life and keeping it private, or even coming up with a plan B option in the event you would need to move yourself or your family elsewhere. Go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast to schedule a few minutes to learn more from a member of our team. We hope to see you soon.
Alrighty, we've got a one I suspect is near and dear to Tony's heart. So we've got Apple. Their Apple Intelligence privacy sets a new standard, but it's not perfect. So Tony, I want to just quickly read a comment. If you know Bruce Schneier, he's a very prominent expert in the cybersecurity space. He said, overall, it's a pretty impressive privacy system for its AI that Apple's put together. But for some data, you're stuck with OpenAI's rules. So the makers of ChatGPT, for anyone listening, Apple strips identifying information when sending OpenAI the queries, but there's a lot of identifying information in many queries. Tony, you've raised the alarm on some of these new integrations of AI into technology, particularly things like smartphones that are so prominent, such a part of our everyday lives. What about this concerns you?
Well, look, what concerns me about this is who's running the company now. If this was still under the guidance of Steve Jobs, I'd have less red flags going on about it because, you know, there was a lot more real push for privacy, you know, under his management. But ever since he unfortunately passed away, that has been waning as we've, you know, read over and over again. You know, Apple's been censoring certain apps in certain countries, you know, abiding by certain rules, et cetera, et cetera. This is not a company that is sticking to the true ethos of, you know, protecting user privacy. I mean, they are protecting user privacy as long as it doesn't affect their profits. And my concern about this AI thing now is that all this super powerful and advanced hardware that is sitting on a phone that is always on, that you, the user cannot open and modify on their own, can easily be manipulated. Okay, I mean, the hardware is there. What stops Apple, you know, assuming, let's say they get coerced by the US government, to flick on a switch or release an update on the OS level that all of a sudden now starts screen recording everything that's going on the phone? So they can't break the encryption of the apps that you're using. But if they wanted to monitor what you were saying, then this would be a sneaky roundabout way to do it. The hardware is there, but the hardware alone doesn't cause a problem. The software needs to activate the switch to do it. And if they were to do it, the user would have absolutely no idea. There's no message that goes on screen. There's no alert. There's no light that switches on. It just happens. So do you trust any company that provides a product like this not to abuse it? I wouldn't. And this is why, you know, I've steered away from Apple and, you know, more into the direction of privacy phones. Because if Apple was so pro-privacy, why not open source iOS at this point? Right? At least this way, it would be able to verify that what they're saying is true, rather than finding out years later that X, Y, and Z was going on. So they market this with all the nice bells and whistles to attract, you know, the clueless consumer that loves all these bells and whistles, until something bad gets exposed and then everybody gets upset. So just keep an eye out on these things. Everything is not always what it seems.
Yeah, that's an important point. Rick, any comment on this specific application of AI, or maybe AI more broadly from a privacy perspective?
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm no cybersecurity guy, right? Like, I'm a marketing guy. You know, I find this sort of stuff fascinating, of course, but I probably couldn't add anything of huge value to the listeners. But it does make you stop and think in terms of, you know, AI is this new shiny tool, and everyone's jumping into ChatGPT and trying to figure out how to best use it for their work. And, you know, even stuff like, you know, coming up with meal plans and, you know, planning their weekends. And, you know, I think, like every other technology, whether it's mobile technology or, you know, just browsing the web on your laptop, you know, people never really took their privacy seriously enough with those things. So, you know, I expect that same behavior to basically continue into how they use AI. And I think the worry with AI is it's probably going to be a little bit better at pulling information out of you, because rather than typing search terms into a Google search, you end up, I mean, it's hard to call it a conversation with AI, right? But you are almost in a sort of back and forth. So, you know, maybe you let your guard down a little bit more. Maybe it's easy to, you know, put information out there onto the web and onto God knows whose server that normally you would be a bit more sensible about on the internet. But there's this weird feeling with AI that, you know, you're having almost like a private conversation. And I think the point is that, okay, private companies can tell you it's private and they anonymize data and that sort of thing. But, you know, you are outsourcing your trust to those people that is the case. And who knows, you know, they collude with governments, you've got spy agencies. I mean, you know, go and listen to what Snowden says about the NSA. I kind of assume they can almost access any phone they want. That's the basic assumption I take at the moment. And I think that's why, you know, people like Tony are going down these routes now with privacy phones, because, you know, unless you can verify the source code yourself and, you know, take more ownership over your own device and how you manage it and set it up, then, you know, that risk is always going to be there. So, yeah, I guess the moral of the story is, as always, you know, improve your privacy, and, you know, there are tools to do it. So you could get in touch with us and we'd love to sort of show you how to set them up, you know.
Well said. Last item. So Japan's largest power company, TEPCO, is mining Bitcoin using surplus energy. To me, this is exciting news. I think it means that more people are catching on to the notion of leveraging, you know, stranded fuel sources, renewables to mine Bitcoin. Tony, what trend do you see in this space? What are you thinking this looks like, you know, moving forward? And what's your reaction to TEPCO specifically?
This is very good news in general, because as far as I'm concerned, it's starting to show that, you know, Bitcoin mining is becoming more decentralized, which is what we want it to be. We don't want it to be, you know, hoarded in specific regions around the world, but rather having it being just as decentralized as nodes. I'm sure more companies are going to be doing this as they learn why it's beneficial and no, it's not bad for the environment. You know, if you listen to all that FUD that was spewed out previously, that's complete rubbish. So I guess more countries, more companies are understanding this now and are using and taking advantage of it. What I'd like to see with regards to Bitcoin mining is having it simplified in a way where your average user can just go out and buy an appliance and plug and play it, and at the same time contribute to the decentralization of the mining itself. Like, for example, you see it in certain products. You know, you can buy a heater, which is actually a Bitcoin miner. There are swimming pools now. You know, the machineries, you know, mines Bitcoin at the same time while providing utility to the pool. You know, like, I'd like to see a lot more of that kind of products being pumped into the market so that its adoption becomes easier, more affordable by as many folks as possible. This way, there's no risk of any centralization of Bitcoin miners in any one or more geographic locations. But yeah, definitely this is good news.
Yeah, Rick?
Yeah, great news. I mean, you know, to a certain extent, as a lot of things in Bitcoin, an inevitability, really, you know, because you have all these sort of crazy people that for the last few years have just been screeching into the ether about Bitcoin, you know, using too much energy and creating carbon and all this sort of stuff. And, you know, these people, they rarely put together logical arguments that make any sense, right? So, I mean, first of all, you know, a Bitcoin miner consumes electricity to run, right? Just like an electric car does. But they'll say that an electric car is green and that a Bitcoin miner is not green. So first of all, you know, that's completely illogical, right? The second thing is, you know, Bitcoin probably still uses like less than 1% of the world's total energy output, right? So it's still a big number, you know, it's bigger than sort of some small countries like Sweden and stuff like this. So it's significant. But, you know, the first thing you got to ask yourself is energy consumption, you know, fundamentally good or fundamentally bad? Right? What do we actually mean here? Because, you know, if you think Bitcoin is completely useless, then yeah, makes sense that you'd think using any energy on it is a waste, right? But if you're one of the sort of tens of millions of people around the world who use it to store their wealth, make uncensorable payments, you know, avoid a puritanical or tyrannical government, you know, that's trying to, you know, oppress them, then those people probably think that it is worthwhile to use that energy to have this kind of money available to them. So, you know, there's a lot of perspectives there. But just going back to, you know, the energy usage argument and the nonsense people have peddled for years is, well, you know, again, I go back to that example with the electric car, that the right question surely to ask is, well, actually, you know, what is the energy mix that goes into this Bitcoin mining? Because if that's all from renewables, then, you know, how much carbon are we really creating, right? And, you know, I'm not going to get into that whole debate about whether, you know, carbon and all this sort of stuff is really the giant problem they say it is. I mean, I tend to lean to the side of, well, no, actually it's not. But ultimately, like, you know, all of these people sort of screeching into the ether, I don't think they've like sat down and really fully thought through their arguments, right? For example, right? So I worked in an energy company for a little bit. I wouldn't ever claim to be any sort of expert, but, you know, energy is difficult to store because you have to put it into batteries. And when you transmit it, there is transmission loss. So it's difficult to move around without having some wastage, right? So what you tend to find around the globe is that energy production is normally situated as close to the energy consumption as you can get, right? But the problem is that energy production isn't flat and energy consumption isn't flat. You know, production goes up and down like this, right? and so does the demand for energy. And sometimes those wave patterns, they don't sync and they don't match. So you might have, for example, a period of low demand, but high supply. You're producing a load of power, especially with renewables, but nobody needs it right now because it's 3 a.m. and everyone's asleep and they don't have their lights on, right? So the problem there is now you've got to either store this energy or just waste it. Now, what's really cool about Bitcoin is that it isn't geographically constrained by anything, right? So it can actually, these mining devices can chase after this energy that we would have otherwise thrown away, right? And actually do something useful with it. And what's really exciting is, you know, I think people should be in favor of this. We're all complaining in Europe that our energy bills are too high. Well, if we take all this energy that we're wasting and we turn it into money and it provides a revenue, then that's going to help these energy companies pass on lower bills to you. So you'll get better bills. You know, it makes things more efficient. It makes energy more efficient. Like, and at the moment, I think, you know, the energy mix of Bitcoin is close to like 50% renewables now. So anyone who's still banging that drum about Bitcoin is dirty or bad for the environment, I'm sorry, but they're just completely ill-informed, haven't done any research, and are probably just climate science zealots, right? Who just screech at anybody who turns the kettle on just because they want a cup of tea, right? And these people are not helpful in any sort of debate. So yeah, all good. And inevitable. Why wouldn't these companies use the energy instead of wasting it? Like a five-year-old can figure this out. So yeah, all good stuff, and logic and incentives always win.
Absolutely. Gentlemen, thank you so much. For those of you listening, appreciate you tuning in. As Tony was talking about, privacy phones, that's one of our newer services we offer. If you are looking to break free of the constraints and the chains of big tech, make sure you reach out to the Bitcoin Way. Go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast. We also help you custody your Bitcoin the right way in full self-sovereignty, full self-custody, Plan B, residency to citizenship options for you, online privacy. We do so many things that are so important, especially in this day of unpredictable politics and governance around the world. So we hope to see you. It's again thebitcoinway.com/podcast. Guys, thanks for joining. We'll catch up again later in the week.
Thanks, Michael.
Cheers.